Welcome to episode 18 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's the small hours of Saturday, the 8th of November, and I'm here with Alan, Dave and Laura. Alan, what have you been up to the last couple of weeks?
I went to the Ubuntu release party.
Oh, yeah, how was that?
Yeah, it was good fun. It was at a pub in London, Waxy O'Connor's, I think it was.
Waxy O'Connor's.
Waxy O'Connor's, yes, traditional Irish pub. I did drink Guinness all night.
Lots of people there?
Yeah, it was really busy, actually. It was loads of Canonical people there, loads of Launchpad, I think it was like 30 Launchpad developers there.
Well, what are they celebrating?
Yeah, good question. loads of other Canonical people, community people as well, loads of friends turned up. And at one point, there was this couple who walked over and said, "What's all this then?" And they spent about 45 minutes to an hour talking to us about Ubuntu, or listening to us talk to them about Ubuntu, asking like sensible questions. And at the end of the evening, I happened to grab hold of one of the Canonical guys and take his very last CD off of him and then run around the pub trying to find this woman and then hand her the CD, because I didn't have one on my person at the time.
But yeah, and then she said, "Why won't these guys just leave us alone? We just want a quiet night out."
I thought she would walk away at some point, but she actually just stood there and listened to us talk about it. It was quite interesting. Mark Shuttleworth was there as well, and we had a bit of a chat about desktop stuff, and yeah, I'm sure we'll talk to him more when we go to UDS. Next release, I highly recommend that other people go to a release party near them, because it's good fun, a good way to get in touch with other people in the Ubuntu community.
Was the London one the only UK-based one? The only formal one?
Yeah, the only formally organised one, yeah.
Well, I mean, you could have a release party sat in the bath.
Yeah, absolutely.
You could have a release party sat at the end of your neighbour's drive, leeching their Wi-Fi.
Oh, fine.
What have you been up to the last couple of weeks, Dave?
You moved house, didn't you?
Yes, yeah.
You haven't got Wi-Fi at home, have you, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, over the last 2 weeks, I've been moving down to the backwaters of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I've been surviving on internet speeds slower than dial-up.
Oh, dear.
Lovely.
Actually, I did notice when I gave you a URL earlier on, and you kept telling me to wait, because you hadn't got it yet. That's so sad.
Are you actually having to use things like Opera Mini just to be able to...
Actually, I mean, for the real geek, I've been using SSH with maximum compression, setting up a SOX proxy to try and speed up by tunnelling my web traffic.
Laura, what about you?
I've convinced 3 people in the past week to listen to the podcast.
Excellent.
Which is pretty good. We've run out of stickers to give them, though, so I had to sort of write it down for them, the URL.
Yeah.
Specifically, they wanted to get a cheap Vigilant, but I made them listen to the episode, so hopefully they'll listen again.
We gave out about 400 stickers or so, and the best part of 100 CDs, promotional limited edition Ubuntu UK podcast CDs at the Expo. So if you weren't at the Expo, you missed out on those.
Yeah, and we haven't had any complaints about the CDs yet.
No.
Does the email address still work?
That's because they just wipe everybody's PC when they install it.
Anyway, we did remove unnecessary software.
Like, no, my own office.
The kernel.
Yeah. No, it was a special customised version of the 804 installer that Alan did, and it had a podcast on the desktop and a podcast wallpaper. And we had to remove a couple of bits of software that nobody uses, like the GIMP.
So, Tony, what have you been up to in the last couple of weeks since the Expo?
I've been upgrading my Myth TV box to... Hardy, actually, and then trying to fix all the bits that broke.
Yeah, I've seen your stress on the IRC recently.
And Twitter.
Yeah, it's just about there. There's a few little glitches, but I'm not too sure there's actually anything...
What doesn't work?
Playing back recordings.
Hey, who needs that anyway? That's overrated.
Yeah, overrated.
Are these Ubuntu issues or Myth issues or what?
I don't know. I don't think it's actually a consistent bug. I think it's some little strange transient problem.
And you've also been playing with?
Yeah, I've also been... trying to get a separate front end and back end working. So we've been given a little sort of small form factor fanless box to review, which we'll review in an upcoming episode. But I've been trying to get it to work as a front end so that you can have a silent box in the front room and have your back end up in the loft or somewhere like that, with the fans and the noisy bits and all the data storage. And I've had some success with it. So we'll watch out for that review. It'll be coming in a future episode. So what have we got in the show today?
We've got a discussion about our experiences of upgrading to Ubuntu 8.10.
We review an Ubuntu Kung Fu book.
And we set another competition.
We discuss about what we like in our perfect Ubuntu setup and how we get there.
We have some listener feedback.
And the news.
Sounds like a fun-packed show. Now, as we all know, Intrepid Ibex has just been released.
I did an upgrade during the week.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah. I just changed the Gutsy in my sources list to Hardy, and then I...
Hardy?
Why are you looking at me? But no, Hardy's great. I mean, now I've got the upgrade done. Myth TV's running on it reasonably well. A few little bugs here and there, but I'm really pleased with Hardy. I think it's a successful release. Well done, everybody. Well done to the Ubuntu community.
Yeah, I think you might be a bit out of date there, Tony. We've all moved on.
What do you mean?
At the back.
What do you mean?
We're all on 8.10.
Yeah.
8.10. Oh, these numbers mean nothing to me.
Yep. A lot of people say, where on earth do these oddball numbers come from? Okay, so we've got 8.10. So what that's actually saying is it's 2008 and it's the 10th month release. So what was Hardy, Tony?
8.04.
Which would mean?
2008 and it's the 4th month.
Yeah.
And presumably 8.04.1 was released on the first day of
Yeah, you're looking
far that's where it all goes wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, I just don't understand it. But anyway, so those of you who have actually updated to what is apparently the latest, greatest version of Ubuntu, Intrepid.
Some people actually don't think it's the greatest. There's been a lot of comments that it's actually a bit of a meh.
A bit of a meh release.
Not a lot in it that's...
Well, hang on. To be fair, when you're releasing every 6 months, you can't expect huge, great big changes.
Some people do, with Ubuntu being so popular and being the poster child of Linux at the moment. People think every 6 months there should be something fantastic and new. And
yeah, I mean, in many ways I can agree with that, but I would also say look at any commercial other operating systems and ask to see what changes happen there every 6 months.
True.
And under the cover changes are also good.
I'm running 8.10 and there are some features that I've noticed, but yeah, there isn't that much. There isn't a compelling, you absolutely must get it because there's two things that you might want to get it for. One's 3G support. So Network Manager, you can now use your 3G dongle and stuff.
But can you use your mobile over Bluetooth at all using Network Manager?
I don't think you can.
You can't. You still have to pull back to command line options.
Yeah, that is a bit rubbish. Okay, and there's one other thing that I saw in 8.10 that I would use, and that is we have a computer in the kitchen, and sometimes people come round and they want to use my computer, but I don't want them using my account or Claire's account, so there's this guest account thing.
I mean, you don't want just... guests seeing what rude websites you've been looking at, do you?
Well, it's more that I don't want them opening up the browser and seeing the default page, which is my email. Claire's, which is going to our online shopping and stuff like that. If people want to come around and they want to surf the web or get their email or whatever, they can just use a guest account and then it throws it all away when they log out.
I hear there is a new wallpaper.
Someone told me it looked like a cave painting and actually couldn't figure out what on earth it was.
It's a bit mystical, isn't it?
I think something you're looking at quite a lot should maybe make you think a bit. I mean, it's just pretty boring.
You make me think a bit, though.
And the look is you. I know when you're sat on your own and you're thinking of Davey, you're thinking...
I have you on my wallpaper. What didn't we get that we thought we might?
Well, apparently the netbook support is still a bit flaky here and there. Some of the netbook stuff doesn't just work.
Yeah, there's still network driver issues, but I think that's being fixed in...
The next release.
New kernel package. The newer Atheros driver, because a lot of the netbooks have this Atheros network card.
I mean, I've been looking at my options for a netbook. I quite fancy getting one if I can stretch to it. And I was looking at the Acer Aspire 1, and there's a list of things that don't work on it out of the box on Intrepid, and it's still quite a long list. There's still quite a long list of things you have to tweak manually.
What kind of stuff? Like sound, ACPI, buttons?
Yeah.
Or the usual kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Right.
I suspect X work, and that's probably about it.
One thing that it missed was OpenOffice version 3.
Yeah, it's a bit of a disappointment.
I mean, because it came out sort of, what was it, about 2-3 weeks before release or so, and it just didn't make it in, which is a bit of a shame, really.
Mm. So will that not come in until next release now?
Yeah.
Or you can get it, well, you'll probably be able to get it backported. I mean, you're right, it may well not come into Intrepid, and that would be a shame, because there are some funky things in OpenOffice 3. Like that, what's that thing where you can do the... split screen, so if you're doing a presentation.
Presenter mode,
yeah. So you've got if you've got two screens plugged in, you've got like a projector.
Do not get me started about presenter mode.
It allows you to have, imagine you're standing on a podium and you've got your laptop in front of you and you've got the big screen behind you and you're plugged into a projector. You can see on your laptop the next slide and your notes, whilst on the big projector screen you have full screen the current slide. So how many of you actually upgraded? Have we all upgraded to 8.10?
I haven't actually upgraded. I mean, I've got it on one computer that I've been running for a few weeks and I haven't you know, so basically that's out of the question. And because I haven't had decent, reliable broadband for the last week, I haven't upgraded my laptop.
No, it was bath night.
I installed the Intrepid at the alpha, so I've been upgrading right through, and so I think I've just installed the last updates today.
I had my laptop running. I upgraded to... I was on 64-bit Hardy, and I upgraded to 64-bit Intrepid 810 early in the like alpha beta stage, and I was upgrading all the way through. And then when it went live, it was like, okay, so now I've got the final release. And that was it. But I thought there were a few weird things. Like, there was the stuff kicking around on my system from the beta that should have been removed. Like, funnily enough, the cruft remover tool that should have been removed wasn't.
I've just run the cruft remover tool, and it's just got rid of some cruft for me.
The cruft remover tool, that was renamed from something else, wasn't it?
I can't remember, actually. There's talk about renaming it again.
Again?
Yeah, because cruft is not a... I asked two guys at work what cruft meant, and one of them said, I've got no idea, and he's like an expert in languages, speaks Chinese and French and German, and I said, what do you think cruft means? And he said, I've got no idea.
Clearly doesn't speak geek, though.
Yes, and I asked the other guy, and he said, is it something to do with dogs?
So talking about things we didn't necessarily expect to be in there, have you actually SSH'd remote logged in to an Intrepid box? Yeah, what do you think about that? People don't know what we're talking about.
I don't know.
You're talking about.
It's the landscape stats that come up when you first log in.
Oh, right.
If you log in, you get a message, you know, the message of the day that gives you the copyright and everything. After it, there's like what your CPU utilization currently is, memory and...
Which is really good.
Well,
I think it's a nice little feature, but there's a line under that, isn't there?
The line under it that says basically if you want, you know, to be able to monitor this remotely or something, then... You might want to go to landscape.canonical.com.
So it's an inline advertising.
Yeah, which is a paid-for service, isn't it?
Yeah, in fact, I've noticed a couple of things. There's that, and if you look at the cover of the new 810 CD, if you look on the back of the CD, it actually advertises shop.ubuntu.com and shop.canonical.com.
Yeah, it's got to buy world-class support and training for Ubuntu and official merchandise and software, please visit shop.canonical.com.
And that's where you can get your DB2 license from, is it?
Yeah, right. £2,000 or whatever. So, yeah.
It's fair enough. They're paying for the CD. Well, yeah. Actually, if you're buying them, you're paying for the CDs. But, you know, they're producing the CDs. It's not that intrusive.
Yeah, I had mixed feelings about both the message of the day thing that Dave mentioned and that. And then I thought, well, you know, they are bankrolling this whole operation, so maybe we should cut them some slack.
It would be more annoying if it said, you can buy Landscape after every command that you ran.
Buy Landscape, buy Landscape, buy Landscape. Yeah.
And every time you type sudo, it says, you can also get support.
Oh, the encrypted private folder. That's another new thing. Mm. Do you think many people are really going to use that? Basically, there's this. You can. It's not on by default, but it's available. You install a package and then you run some stuff. And you end up with a folder called private or whatever you want to call it in your home directory. And anything you put in there is encrypted.
Now, this is something Dustin Kirkland was really keen about, the last UDS and FOSCAM. We talked about it both, didn't we?
Mm. There was an open week session about it as well, I think.
Yeah. It's a nice feature. And, you know, I can see how some people might find it useful. And, in fact, I did set it up on my desktop PC during the beta phase of 8.10. And I've completely forgotten about it. And it works. My email is all in there. And my SSH keys and loads of other stuff.
Yeah, because what people are doing is, because you've only got one folder inside your home directory where everything in there is encrypted, obviously you need things elsewhere on your file system. Like, if you use SSH keys and what you've already mentioned, you think, well, hang on, I can't put them in there as well as have them where I need them. So what they're doing is they're putting them inside the encrypted directory and then having symlinks or shortcuts to where they actually belong on the file system.
Yeah, that's exactly what
that makes sense.
Yeah,
and it took a while actually to copy the files because I've got all my email downloaded locally. When I dragged my .evolution folder into the private folder, it took some time because obviously it's got to encrypt all that.
And you've got shed data. Loads of email.
Yeah,
And presumably the main application is for people who've got laptops.
It's the, yeah,
you
know,
when you've got your military secrets in there, and you can leave the laptop on the train and not worry about it.
So, are you happy with 8.10?
It doesn't seem that much different to me, and it might be because I installed it at the alpha level, and it just wasn't that exciting on release day because there was nothing, it wasn't like a big deal, broke or anything.
There's a new book just been released called Ubuntu Kung Fu by
Kung fu.
Well, let's go to the pronunciation expert, Dave. How would you say it?
Kung fu.
Ubuntu Kung Fu, and it's by Keir Thomas.
Yep, and we've got a review copy.
So what's in it?
It's got two main sections. There's a kind of introduction to Ubuntu and a kind of general setup and getting yourself up and running. And then the main bulk of the book is over 300 tips. But they're not a short tip, like, you know, here's how you maximise a window or something
like
that.
Yeah, because I imagine they'd be like little one-liners, but they're actually like
comprehensive.
And it's most of a page or more for each tip.
They're like mini how-tos, really, more than tips. They're pretty good.
What sort of range of things do they cover?
Oh, everything from like media and installing all the necessary bits and bobs and, you know, reconfiguring stuff, tuning the boot up, that kind of stuff.
There were certainly things now I thought, oh, that's a good idea. And it's things you wouldn't necessarily normally come across on Google. You might find it on, like, the Ubuntu Planet or something where someone's pointed it out.
The thing about it is, it's one of these books where you don't have a set of chapters where you read a chapter and now I know everything about networking, or read a chapter and now I know all about printing. It's kind of like a big mash of, you know, these little mini how-tos.
When I actually first opened it, I thought, hey, there are some really good things here, but it's not something I could sit down and read because it has got some intro stuff. So I think if I had come from maybe from a Windows background, I think I'll probably get into it a bit more. There is a section on what Aptitude is.
Right.
And I think, well, you know, I know what Aptitude
is. Well, yeah, but we're not target audience, are we?
That's my point.
What is the target audience? I mean, there seems to be some command line stuff in there and quite a lot of GUI stuff. And
yeah, there's actually command line stuff pretty early on in the book as well.
They don't seem to go in any particular order of difficulty or anything like that. They seem quite mixed up.
Yeah.
I mean, there was one about halfway through, which was how to find what version of GNOME you're running, which is click system and then click about GNOME.
Yeah.
And it tells you what version it is. And that was kind of halfway through the book. And you can't get any easier than that, really.
If you mix them up, then it's something that you can just dip in and get a tip and go, oh, that's great. You know, if that was just sat on the coffee table and you picked it up and flicked through, there's next to each tip, there's a little box, a little empty square box. And the idea being, if you see something in there you like, you might not be sat at your PC. It's something you can pick up off the coffee table and tick the little box.
Okay.
We must remember to try that or do that or, you know, have a play with that when I get back to my PC.
Okay, let's try this book out. Let's pick a random page and see what tips are on there. Laura, what page number?
130.
Okay, what's on page 130 then?
It's going to be this page is intentionally left blank.
Scanning for viruses.
Okay. Something every Linux user needs to do.
Okay, it tells how to do that. You can do a full system scan and how that can be very disk intensive. It talks about ClamTK, what ClamTK won't scan, such as things in the /proc directory, and what happens if ClamTK finds a virus and how it quarantines it.
Okay.
That'd be useful. Dave? Someone coming from Windows?
Yeah. Dave, throw a page number out.
Okay, let's go for page 385.
Yeah, that doesn't exist. That doesn't go up that far. 367. And the last 10 pages of that are index.
Okay.
Let's go for
I'm going to go for 360.
360.
This is going to be the thank yous page, isn't it?
Yep, beginning of the index.
Fail.
Right, okay, I'm going to pick 287.
Okay.
I think we're onto a winner there.
That's got to be a winner.
It's how to always know your IP address.
Oh, man, that's something that really bugs me.
Yeah, I always want to know my IP address.
I think I know how to tell that, but go on, what does the book say?
It says, for example, you could right-click Network Manager, select Connection Information in the menu that appears and look for the IP address in the list.
That works.
At a command line, you can type ifconfig and look for the init address line.
Or grep.
No, that tip isn't in there.
That's not in there.
That actually works. I've just done the Network Manager thing. I've just done it.
Oh, wow. Cool. So you've learned something there, Tony.
Yeah, and it tells me my DNS servers and subnet mask and all that sort of stuff as well.
And what's your public IP address, Tony?
Not on here, because it's not a public IP address.
It does say that you might come across limitations if you're behind a NAT router.
Hey!
And what you actually see if you do it behind a NAT router. And then there's a solution called Giplet, which you can install using Synaptic.
Can you spell that, Laura?
Giplet. And this will ensure that your external IP address is displayed.
Oh, see, that is a useful tip. That really is.
Okay, Tony.
Okay, all right, I will go for page 83.
It's part of configuring Ubuntu's firewall. and how to configure incoming connections using Firestarter and clicking the policy tab and ensuring inbound traffic policy is selected and that kind of thing.
And how many pages does it devote to talking about Firewall there?
From page 82 to T6.
Okay. That's pretty good.
A few pages. And is it all using Firestarter, or is it, does it talk about UFW, the Ubuntu Firewall thing?
Or IP tables?
It seems to be Firestarter all the way through with an introductory bit.
All right, fair enough.
Cool.
Alan, pick a number. He's got his thinking head on, look.
He's sweating.
Oh, man. 193.
That's a rubbish number.
I was going to say 192, but you might think I was getting inspired by IP addresses.
Okay, on 193, there are two tips. One is removing the annoying delay when installing Firefox extensions.
Oh,
what annoying delay is that?
You know, when you click on an add-on on a website, it pops up in a box, and then the install thing is grayed out for 5 seconds.
You have to hover over it, don't you?
3 seconds.
I actually do find that annoying. I mean, that has wasted at least a minute of my life.
3 seconds.
Well, no, cumulatively.
I mean, Dave...
All right, fair enough. Depends how many you're installing.
To be fair, it's not a minute you'd have done much with.
Well, yeah, that's a minute I'll never get back.
Apparently, this delay is there for a good reason. It's to ensure you don't just click automatically without first reading what the dialogue box says you're
but
about
to. But we all
install.
Want to do that.
No, you just stare at the install button until it stops being grayed out, and you press it. You don't read anything but the install button.
But... you can go about colon config in Firefox's address bar and click the I'll be careful, I promise button.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, that's cute.
Then in the filter text area, type something and double-click the entry under the value heading and change it to the delay.
And then that just goes away.
So you could set it to a full minute delay.
I'd love to do that on someone else.
Oh, man. I was set to an hour.
That's worth getting. When somebody lends you their laptop so you can just check your email.
See, this is what the guest account is for.
Yeah.
Stop people doing that.
Okay, what was the other tip on that page?
Oh, the other one was to view technical details of your PC's hardware.
Okay.
How does it do that? LSHW or...?
LSPCI?
It says GNOME Device Manager used to be a standard feature of Ubuntu, but for some reason isn't any longer, so you can still install it using Synaptic.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's the way it's talking about going.
All the things we've selected seem to be reasonably geeky. Yeah. People are quite into their computers.
And there are some fairly non-geeky things like how to install MS Comic Sans and other Windows fonts.
Yep.
Mm. What about Windings?
I think that comes under the Windows Microsoft fonts. Two that have just caught my attention. One's turning off the system beep, if it really irritates you.
That is annoying.
And another one, add drop shadows to screenshots, because you can.
Yeah, that's handy.
So is it something you think you'd recommend to a new user? Say, really?
It's not something you give to your mother-in-law, is it?
Just flicking through it now, even though there are some easy things in it, they're so mixed up that you can't even say, go read this section of the book.
It would benefit from having a section for, you know, beginners, a section on packaging, a section on audio and video or something.
I think so, yeah.
I think I might have potential to give this to someone who's reasonably geeky, but is very new to Ubuntu.
Yeah, someone who knows Windows and is a techie person, maybe.
Yeah, if you're a sort of a power user or something on Windows.
Then, yeah, I think they'd find it particularly useful.
And it's the sort of book that you're only ever going to get use out of a small proportion of the tips, I think.
Yeah, well, it depends on your level, again. You know, if you're a real beginner, then there's going to be an awful lot in there that you won't know. And you can also get it in PDF format.
Oh, right. Okay.
You can buy it online from the website, ubuntukungfu.com, and there's a link there to buy it in PDF form. I think it's $22, which is really cheap. And I saw it on Amazon really cheap.
I mean, you can't even say how much $22 is, because by the time this actually comes to press.
But the Dead Tree version is available for about £16, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty cheap. It's on amazon.co.uk, and the Pragmatic Programmers Bookstore, I think, is the main website.
And I think that price is worth it.
And I know it's quite girly, but the kitten on the front is kind of cute.
Yeah, it's got a kitten doing kung fu, hasn't it?
It's a ninja kitten.
Yeah,
it's quite cute, actually. You'll find it on the website as well.
Yeah, it's not just girly, then.
No, it's definitely... Kittens are cute. I can't help it.
Yeah, which is why our cat here has turned up to just be part of this review.
What do we think? If we had to rate this book, like, you know, out of 5?
3.5.
Okay. Dave?
I think I'll just give it a thumbs up.
Dave doesn't want to be pinned down to anything as precise as 1 to 5.
Well, okay. I mean, you know...
Well, I'd say that's 5, then.
Four. I guess 4.
Yeah, Laura?
Yeah, 3.5.
I'd give it a 4 myself. So we're looking 3.5, 4, something like that.
3.75.
Okay, so I mean, they actually gave us this book as a review copy. So should we give it away in a competition?
I think we should.
Yeah, we like it so much, we'll give it away.
Yeah. It was that good.
And so the question we're going to set is, how many tips are there in the book?
Exactly how many?
If there's nobody that gets it exactly right, then we'll take the nearest correct answers. If everybody gets it exactly right, then we'll draw the names out of a hat. Okay, so get your entries in by Wednesday the 19th of November.
And we'll post it to you, and please don't live any further away than the UK. But if you do, we will post it to you.
And where should we send the entries to?
Well, we won't send them anywhere, but listeners can send them to competition@ubuntu-uk.org. Codeweavers got carried away with Obama mania and decided to give their crossover Office software for free, allowing people to run Microsoft Office on Linux. Just like wine, really. The Linux community surprised itself with fevered attempts to download the proprietary software, which melted the Codeweavers servers.
That was quite funny, actually.
Yeah, you wouldn't have thought people would be that keen to get proprietary software on Linux.
It's free stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, but to be fair, did you also download the Mac version as well?
No.
Oh, I did.
Why would you do that?
Do you even have a Mac?
No. So we can blame you. Actually, I did download it and I installed it. And it's quite polished. It's quite nice. You know, you install the GUI and it gives you a list of Windows applications that it supports. And I scrolled down through the entire list and went, nope, 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 nope. And there's not one thing in there that I actually require.
No, but you can also use it to install unsupported things, which do work really well as well.
Yeah, sure.
Mark Shuttleworth said in an interview that he didn't think anyone could make money from the Linux desktop, which is handy as he's got lots. Otherwise, we'd see him by the exit door at an expo rattling a tin.
I can see why a lot of people jumped on this. You know, the fact that he's commented and people are saying, oh my God, if he's not going to make any money, surely he's not going to carry on.
What he's saying is they're not going to make money by selling box sets of Ubuntu. They're going to make it from services and support.
Equally, he also said that he thinks that Canonical could turn a profit from the server product within 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, the amount they charge for support, I'm not surprised.
Hey! Guys over at Phoronix have done some benchmarking to compare the performance of Ubuntu 7.04, 7.10, 8.04, and the most recent 8.10. In their tests, Phoronix highlighted some surprising differences in performance between recent versions of Ubuntu. In 8.04 and 8.10, for example, MP3 encoding took double the amount of time than in earlier releases and slower than other distros like Fedora, with developers levelling some of the blame at conservative optimizations in GCC and changes in kernel configuration, the analysis continues.
It's a little bit of a worry, isn't it? Because one of the things we tell people about Ubuntu is that it's quite performant.
Yeah, and that it doesn't get slower over time, and that, you know, new releases don't mean you have to upgrade all the memory in your machine. And
you don't have to reinstall to get a nice, fresh, fast desktop install every 6 months like you do with Windows.
But the good thing is the developers have been talking about this on one of the developer mailing lists, and they are looking at it, and they're, you know, being totally open. They're not dismissing this as, you know, not true. It's been worked on.
The flip side is you don't have to do an install every 6 months to get a faster desktop. You get an install every 6 months to do a slower desktop.
Google's Android requires you to use Ubuntu to build the source files on Linux. This isn't strictly true. They do say there's no reason why you can't build it on non-Ubuntu systems. I'm like anyone who tries to let them know how it goes.
So is this a byproduct of Google using Ubuntu internally?
Yeah, perhaps? Presumably the Android team are using Ubuntu to develop.
Or Gubuntu, don't they have their own internal release?
They have multiple different distros internally.
Yeah, but
I
think they actually do build their own customised SO, don't they?
The website just says that they test on Ubuntu.
I'm not sure whether we can confirm that, and there's a black helicopter just going.
Kulu.com has announced that they'll be selling the OpenMoko FreeRunner with Android pre-installed beginning in November 2008, as well as offering free downloads of the FreeRunner port of Android to existing FreeRunner owners.
If you're comparing Google,
the G1,
the Google G1 phone, the
which has just come out,
HTC, yeah, with the FreeRunner, then the Google phone has, you know, better hardware in some ways. It's got a keyboard for a start, and the FreeRunner doesn't, and 3G, and the FreeRunner doesn't.
But does Android have that nifty padlock thing?
Well, you can write one to make it. Oh, open source, make your own.
The Ubuntu shop from Canonical released a limited edition commemorative t-shirt to celebrate the release of Intrepid Ibex. They were designed in an arguably awkward colour of lime green. Within 24 hours, they were removed from the virtual shelves. It is thought that the colour was the reason for this.
Insert joke about brown.
Do you mean like Gordon Brown?
Oh no, I meant about colours, not like colours brown.
So have any of you got any of these t-shirts?
No, it looked like a sort of accident in a mushy pea factory. There was a lot of green and brown going on.
I thought it was a snot.
I drunkenly ordered three of them within the 24-hour period before they went before they disappeared.
And would you wear them?
They're still in their plastic bags, actually. They've been delivered and I'm not sure I will, actually.
Is it a coincidence they were delivered on Halloween?
Nubuntu, the distro for the security aware, had itself a release at the end of October. Its website, nubuntu.org, says it's derived from Ubuntu but with unnecessary packages removed. Things like GNOME, OpenOffice and Evolution.
and the networking stack.
To be fair, it's aimed at security testing and they're less concerned with people using it than in learning how to produce the distro, I think, and how to set up security testing. The Aegis project has announced €12.6 million investment in accessibility, with a vast majority of it focused on open source solutions. The Aegis project is a consortium of 20 partners representing much of the leading expertise of accessibility from industry disability organisations and university and commercial research organisations. I think it includes companies like Sun at the bigger end of the industry. One of our listeners, Ian Pascoe, emailed in to say that Ubuntu is the only current distro that has accessibility functionality built into its live CD to enable visually impaired users to benefit from Ubuntu from the very, very beginning of either installation or running the live CD.
That's really cool.
That is really cool.
On Planet Ubuntu, there's been a few people who've started a little meme, which is, what do you do to your machine immediately after an install? Like the post-install stuff you do to get the perfect setup or have your setup sweet, exactly as you want. And I just wondered what you guys do, whether you use any tools like, I'm going to mention their names, but I would recommend that nobody uses them, Automatics or Ultimatics, or something like Tweak or some other script or something, or do you just like add stuff when you need it or what? What do you do, Laura?
What do they do? That'd be a no, but what do they do?
Well, Automatics and Ultimatics is a derivative of Automatics, and they've been around a while, and the purpose that they were supposed to serve was to make it easy to install stuff on Ubuntu, like, if you wanted drivers for your video card and
things that aren't included, like Skype. They're not in the repository.
Yeah, and other applications, other third-party applications and stuff that's actually in the repo, but just make it nice and easy to find it and stuff. But it failed quite badly in the way it was, the people communicated in the community, and there was a lot of bad blood and feeling about it. And a new version has come out, Ultimatics, which if you visit Matthew Garrett's blog, which isn't always family-friendly, as a minor warning, it's mjg59.livejournal.com. He has had an in-depth review of both of them, and basically the short answer is don't use them.
No.
So,
what were some of the problems that he found?
They're quite lengthy, actually, but lots of them, like bad packaging, executing commands that would override situations that the packaging system is trying to protect you from.
Right.
But before you, did he actually walk into this with an unbiased viewpoint, considering the slating he gave his predecessor somewhat a year ago?
Whether he's biased or not, all you've got to do is look at the code. And if you look at the code, it isn't nice. I mean, really. I mean, I'm not a coder, and I've looked at it, and it's not nice. So anyway, that's what they are. And people can make their own judgment on them by reading the code. But I just wondered what you guys do use. If you don't use that, what do you use? What do you do after you install?
After I install, I look for the email client and the web browser I'd normally use, realise that the email client isn't there by default, and install it, and do the same absolutely every time.
So you have like packages that you know you like, like Thunderbird?
Yeah.
Right. So you don't like Evolution, you like Thunderbird.
Yeah.
So immediately after installing,
I install Thunderbird.
You install Thunderbird. Anything else that comes to mind? Or is it... Do you kind of do it piecemeal?
Yeah, when I discover I don't have it, and I thought I had it, and then I remember that I haven't installed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really annoying, actually.
It's one of the advantages of having a local mirror is that you can get it all really quickly, though.
Unless she's at work or somewhere, yeah. Or out somewhere, and yeah.
Beyond my control.
You should get her a 3G card and VPN access to home, which you can do with free software, apparently.
Yeah, network manager. Yeah.
I think one of the things I like to install is Terminator, which is the console utility where you can actually split mm-hmm. the actual... Split it up into multiple sessions.
Yeah, we interviewed Chris Jones about it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, is that it? Is it you just install everything and then you install Terminator and that gets you set forever?
No.
Does anybody here actually use any of these automatics or similar products to get loads of proprietary stuff?
I have tried automatics a long time ago.
I did test it,
I didn't really have any quibbles with it,
Yeah, but the problem is, it's one of those things that you don't have a problem with it if you just run
it.
You don't, yeah, exactly. When it breaks 6 months down the line when you try and do an upgrade, or a year down the line when you try and do an upgrade, it's then that you find out, and then someone tells you it's because you used automatics 2 years ago. You know, it's very hard, but hard pill to swallow.
I must admit, I've never felt the need to use any of those sort of things. Yeah. I mean,
how often do you reinstall, though?
Well, very, very rarely, I guess, but I don't need the things that it provides.
Codecs? Video drivers?
Well, codec stuff, there's the Codec Buddy thing that gets it for me and seems to do a good enough job. It doesn't seem to give me any problems. Maybe I'm just lucky.
But you don't install Flash, do you, or Java or anything like that?
No, I tend to use the free Flash, the Ganache.
Okay.
All the bits and the proprietary stuff that it gets, I don't tend to use. So I've never really felt the need to get them.
I do use them. And it's just a pain when I discover I don't have them, so I go onto Facebook and try and look at somebody's photos or video or something. Don't have Flash. Can't find Flash.
Telling you something there. Maybe you shouldn't be using Facebook.
Yeah. No.
Says the bloke who has a Facebook profile.
Yeah. And then, go to somewhere that needs Java.
I've started to keep a note of, having done a few installs for testing purposes and, because I've got a couple of laptops and a desktop and I've reinstalled a few times, I've kept these notes now of what I do post-install, and actually it's only three lines that I do, and those three lines give me pretty much every application I need.
There's one meta package I always like to install is Build Essential to help you compile stuff and a load of other programming tools and some other remote some sysadmin tools and such,
and those are in the repo anyway. One line to get all of those in one go, so that's nice and easy.
I found on my wiki the list of packages that I install on a fresh install, which are command line tools, so it tends to be for servers, but they're things that keep me happy. And some of them are now in the standard install anyway, but they weren't originally. Which is SSH. Yeah.
Nobody's excited about installing SSH.
Except
get in there. Yes.
Get in there. LSOF, so list open files.
What?
Elinks. So the command line web browser.
Text-based browser,
You see why I leave him to do the sysadmin stuff?
Yes.
He actually
living on the
it.
Edge.
W3M is being dropped from the server edition, isn't it, man?
Who cares?
What do you guys like?
Screen.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Screen. We all love Screen.
And back in the days when there wasn't an NTP server installed by default, I installed one of those. And Unzip.
Okay. But do you not run a graphical environment on your PC?
Oh, yeah. On my PCs I do. But this is a little list of things that when I get a new, fresh server installed, these are the tools that I install to make me happy and that I use on a fairly regular basis.
Setting up Linux machines is so much nicer than setting up Windows machines.
Oh, totally.
Because I used to trash my Windows machine at work quite frequently somehow and then get a CD and start from scratch and do it myself. And it'd be 2 weeks before I'd found everything, because every time you find an application, you've got to go and find the setup file. Just doing a Synaptic is absolutely fantastic, and I can be up and running in a day.
Yeah, I've had to rebuild a few machines for family and friends and stuff, and I hate doing it because it's... I've got a local copy of some of the stuff, like, a copy of the antivirus software, the setup program...
And the license number.
Yeah, well, yes. Yeah, programs that have license keys as well are a pain in the butt. I try not to use those. But, I agree with you. But it's not just the initial setup of a Windows machine that is painful compared to what we can do on Ubuntu. It's the ongoing maintenance. Like, I've got a Windows virtual machine that I use for managing my Drobo. And
because you love freedom.
Hang on. You've got a dedicated virtual Windows machine just for managing your Drobo.
No, I'm not that stupid. I also run Chromium in it and...
As you run a proprietary web browser.
Getting better.
No, there's a few things. Like, you know, the Ethernet over power adapters, the little Develo things?
Yeah.
There's a Windows-based tool that lets you manage those.
There's a Linux-based tool.
I know
as well.
There is a Linux tool, but it's not.
But he actually runs. He actually runs the Linux one under Windows using a Linux emulator.
Do you perhaps run your Windows full screen so you can't really sort of see the Linux that's underneath it or around it?
I use it in seamless mode.
Oh right, so you
I actually have two toolbars, one for the Windows and one for Linux. But I don't boot my. This is the whole point I'm getting to. Is I rarely boot it because I don't need to do any management on the driver because it manages itself.
No, he just suspends it. He doesn't need to boot it.
And I don't. And when I do, but when I do wake up this Windows VM, all these pieces of software go. Yeah, I need an update. You know, yeah. Java and antivirus and their Microsoft
and Adobe Flash. That's always one that's coming up.
And these things just annoy the hell out of me because I want to wake it up, do something, and then shut it down again.
Yeah.
And I don't care about all this stuff. I mean, okay. I might want to install updates, and that's fine, but I would rather hit one icon, one button, and do them. And that, so it's not just the initial install, it's the ongoing maintenance that's great. And so, answering the original question, what I install is there's a package called Ubuntu Restricted Extras, which has is a meta package, isn't it? It's got Java, Flash.
Pulls in all the magic.
Naughty codecs, you know, all the kind of groovy stuff that make your... Yeah, bad man. And... GNOME-do, which I quite like.
A lot of people like GNOME-do, don't they?
GNOME-do is great.
What's GNOME-do?
It's a launcher. So rather than finding applications on the menu, you press the Windows key and press space. And
Windows key, I'm missensing something here.
I don't have one of those on here.
Seriously, you don't have a Windows key on
your
laptop?
I don't have a Windows key on my laptop.
Well, you can map it to any other key. It doesn't really matter. By default, it's a Windows key. So your Windows key space, and this box pops up, and then you can type like the first letter of an application, and it will find it. Like if I press S for Skype or T for terminal or something like that. And there's loads of plugins for it. And
rather than having to click the menu.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, I'm actually using the predecessor to that called Alt F2, which basically top Alt F2 and type S. And hey, you know, the thing with S will start.
Like Skype.
Yeah.
Well, I'm using the predecessor to that, which is Control Alt F1, login, export display.
Display zero,
You're not making yourself
Geeks.
Look good.
Geeks.
Oh, poor Tony.
I also install a couple of media players, VLC and MPlayer, for when Totem isn't good enough.
Yeah, I quite like the way Totem prompts you and gives you the option. Yeah.
It won't download W32 codecs.
Really?
No, it downloads the GStreamer codecs. And W32 codecs has stuff that GStreamer doesn't
have. But I mean, as Laura's saying, if you try and open up an MP3 in Totem,
not doing it in Totem, though.
But we're just saying about this is another really good thing I like about Totem. Yeah. You know, you try and open up an MP3 in Totem, and it'll say, hang on, you can't play this unless you install this. Do you want to install this? Mm. Yes, I do.
So what would you recommend new users do then?
Well,
what would you recommend you use?
There's a tool I've had installed for quite a while, the Ubuntu Tweak. And I think it's based off this sort of XP Tweak.
Tweak UI.
The
Power Toy thing.
Yeah, and it's actually, it's quite, you know, it's a slick,
what does it do?
Slick interface. I mean, you can use it for changing like system information, like what the machine's called and things like that. But also for changing like your user shell using, because it's set to Dash to start with. I always change it to Bash.
Yeah, when I asked what would end users do, I'm not convinced an end user really cares what shell they're using.
Yeah,
they shouldn't have to care. But so is there anything in there that an end user might want?
You can set your documents folder through that. It's not that exciting, to be honest.
You're not selling it well there, Dave.
No, but I haven't really looked at it that much. Templates. You can use it to set your templates. For like open
so basically things. This tweak thing actually sounds more like a front end to the gconf config things.
I'm sure it is.
It sounds like a configuration thing.
I think it's more than gconf, but yeah, I'm sure a lot of settings go into gconf. But
no, what I mean is it's not a software install thing.
No, it does have an add remove software thing.
Oh, it does.
Well.
Oh, okay, cool. What would be really cool is if our listeners could tell us what they do post install. Or tell us if they know of any scripts or funky stuff. Don't tell us about automatics or automatics, but something else.
Something that's really good.
And the prize for this, we won't be sending you something out, but you will get the envy of your friends by getting your voice, you know, by getting your message on the podcast.
Yeah, that's something a lot of people aspire to, I'm sure. They really, really want that. They lay in bed wanting.
You can tell that by the number of people that leave us voicemail.
Yeah. How many is it? Two?
I think it might be three.
Yeah, one of those is a personal call for Dave.
Yes, it was! But no, seriously, chaps, send us emails because we love to read them. We do read every email. And I think it'd be really nice for us to get a list of what you guys do.
Yeah, send it to podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. Okay, we had quite a few emails pointing out that the Debian link on the podcast website from the last episode actually links to ubuntu.com.
Yeah, one of the people who pointed it out was Phil Hans from the Debian project who we interviewed last time.
Yeah, and the reason it does this is because it's Alan's idea of a joke.
I did run it past you guys and you said, yes, that would be funny.
I asked some
other people and they said it was fine.
Yeah, but you're right. Decided not to ask your co-presenters.
Maybe the listeners could write in and let us know if they find it amusing.
Yes, everybody finds it funny.
Especially if you use that Debian derivative. Yes.
You could actually write that down and put that in a cracker for Christmas.
We had a mail from Javier, I think. Can we have more desktop-oriented segments? Liked the backup one. Would like other stuff like office suites, graphic creation, so Inkscape, OpenOffice, that kind of stuff, scientific software, desktop search engines, that kind of jazz.
Sounds a good idea.
Yeah, I think we could certainly cover more of that in the future.
I guess the problem is that most of us actually don't use much in the way of desktop software. I mean, I spend most of my day in a browser or in a terminal.
Use some, but I don't. Try different things. I just stick with the one.
Yeah, change is dangerous.
Maybe we need to set ourselves a mission of using K-Office for a couple of
days. Hey, easy, Tony. Well, Daryl sent us an email about remote support. He said he successfully run Crossloop and TeamViewer on a Hardy desktop using Wine. He says he's able to view desktops of other people, but they can't view his desktop. So you can run the client, but you can't run the server. But it'd be great to have something like Crossloop in Ubuntu by default.
So that they could help him.
Or vice versa. I mean, we talked about this when we did the remote support one. We talked about Gitso and another remote support.
VNC. VNC. Yeah, all the other bunch.
Yeah. It would be good. I mean, I think they need to work on Gitso a bit, but I think that would be a great one to put in there.
Yeah, Mish mentioned Copilot and Drew DeConning mentioned Hamachi.
Hamachi's a bit different. That's a VPN kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very simple VPN. You can have a VPN in minutes, well.
Allegedly.
Yeah, it does work.
Really?
But you're VPNing into, you're turning up on someone else's server.
Adam Sweet of Passion Star fame emailed about the backup segment. He just says to us, "Hi guys and girls, just thought I'd offer some sage advice regarding backups." I better stop that voice now. Everybody goes on about backups, but they don't matter in the slightest so long as you're doing them. What everybody ought to care about is restoring. Backups are useless without restoration. He has a friend who we all know, but who shall remain nameless. And then he actually says, no, it wasn't Jono, who set up home user backup from the Ubuntu repositories, left it backing up his stuff and forgot about it. 6 months down the line, couldn't work out why his massive hard disk was nearly full. On looking, he found that it was an enormous archive of backups he'd forgotten about. I was rather pleased that it had been working all the time. However, the first time he needed to restore something and home user backup couldn't actually read its own backup archives, he was less than impressed. So the moral of the story is test that the backups actually work in the way you expected them to and that you can restore from them, otherwise they're useless. He says, it sounds like a fun-packed show. BBC Radio 4, eat your heart out. Thank you, Adam. Yeah, it's the salient lesson to learn, isn't it? Backups are only good if you can get stuff back out of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder how Axe sorted that.
Do you know what? I have to tell you, many years ago when I used to do IT support, I did some support for a local company, and they used to back up every day at 5 o'clock. They'd walk out the door, put a tape in the drive in the PC, and walk out, and they'd leave it running overnight, and then the next day it was all finished. I went there because they needed to restore a file. So I asked them to get the tape out, and it was all nicely labeled, and I put it in, and I started the restore using this DOS-based backup software. And it said zero files restored. I thought that's a bit strange. So I thought using wildcards or explicitly mention the whole path or whatever it was. And I couldn't get any files off this tape. And eventually I rummaged around looking at the configuration of the backup software. And it was actually backing up the wrong folder. It was backing up an empty directory. So every single day they were backing up nothing to the tape. It was just enough to like spin the tape up and wind it backwards and forwards and write a log file. And they'd never actually backed anything up ever. So I reconfigured it so that it backed up correctly. And within a couple of days, we had a phone call from them telling us that the backup was running too slowly. Like, yeah, that's because it's actually backing up now. We also had an email from Sam on the subject of backups. Laura mentioned Pi Backup in episode 16, and Sam says they can't find it. Has it been removed? And actually the answer is no. Laura got the name wrong. It's called Pi Backpack.
all in one word. Rucksack.
Yeah. PY, backpack, all one word. Laura's mistake.
Sorry, and Sam.
And it's actually a member of the UK Ubuntu community that's done that, isn't it?
Is it?
Andrew Price from the Ubuntu UK community.
Cool.
Ah, okay.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to get hold of us, you can email the show via podcast@ubuntu-uk.org or leave 30 seconds of voicemail on 0845 508 1986 and make Davey happy.
You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/UUPC, or on Identica, identi.ca/UUPC.
Join us on Facebook, search for the Ubuntu UK podcast.
Alternatively, if you're into IRC, you can chat to us via the #Ubuntu-UK channel on the Freenode IRC network.
We welcome suggestions, material, tips, reviews or rants and feedback, both positive and negative, so please get in touch.
Thanks also to our network of mirrors who make it possible for us to bring the show to you, including Bitfolk and our other community mirrors hosted by Nafalo and Martin Meredith.
Yep, and those mirrors have helped us serve out over 160,000 downloads since we started.
My
wow.
17 episodes ago. So thank you for downloading, and if you're a new listener, you can go to the website and download the entire archive. Thanks for listening. Join us next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.